There's a famous story which is quoted in by the Ramo in Teras Achatos. That's where I saw. Rabbi Yelapian brings it from the Teras Achatos. I never saw it inside. There was a Plato, the famous Greek philosopher, the teacher of Aristotle, met Yirmiyahu. They were contemporaries. And Plato asked Yirmiyahu, saw that he was crying over the Churban Beis HaMikdash. And he asked him, he says, why should a wise man like you be crying over something that happened in the past? And secondly, why should you cry over the loss of stones and wood? That's something not something to cry about. So Yirmiyahu answered him by asking him a question. He asked him a philosophical question, a question in philosophy, which was so deep that Plato couldn't answer. And Yirmiyahu then answered him. Plato was astounded. Where'd you get this wisdom? He said, well, I got all of this wisdom from these stones and wood. That's why I'm crying, because I don't have this wisdom. And the second question that you asked, why should I cry about something that happened in the past? I can't answer you that question because you're not Jewish and you won't understand. So I'd like to explain what is that question that Yirmiyahu would have answered had he been Jewish. Why should a wise person be mourning stones and wood that is destroyed? And why is it that only a Jew should mourn for those stones and wood? First of all, I'd like to explain a very, very obscure passage in the Kisvei Arizal. I saw this quoted by other Sforim. It says there that if someone eats on Tisha B'Av, it's as if he ate from the Gid HaNoshe. Gid HaNoshe is the sinew on the thigh bone, which we're not allowed to eat. Gid HaNoshe. There's a pasuk in the Torah, Al Ken Yoychlu B'nei Yisrael is Gid HaNoshe. Jews are not allowed to eat Gid HaNoshe. Why are we forbidden to eat Gid HaNoshe? Because of a story that happened in the Torah. Yaakov Avinu wrestled with the angel of Esav. Every nation has an angel. And the angel of Esav came to wrestle with Yaakov Avinu, with the forefather Jacob. He wanted to kill him. And Yaakov wrestled with him all night. And in the morning, Yaakov defeated the angel of Esav. However, when he got up to walk, he realized that he had to limp because his Gid HaNoshe, the sinew of his thigh bone, had been affected by the wrestling. And therefore, we're not allowed to eat that sinew. We're not allowed to eat the Gid HaNoshe. What's the connection? Because Esav defeated Yaakov in a certain area, he caused him to limp. Therefore, we are not all Jews, all descendants of Yaakov, who we are not allowed to eat the Gid HaNoshe. What's the connection between the two? Because the battle between the angel of Esav and Yaakov Avinu is not a simple battle between two gladiators. What did they battle about all night? They battled, when you fight with an angel, when you wrestle with an angel, you don't wrestle physically. It's a spiritual struggle. It's a spiritual wrestling. It was a battle over whose ideas should become ascendant in the world. Should Esau's ideas be ascendant, or should Yaakov Avinu's ideas be ascendant? Now, these two ideas are two diametrically opposed ideas. There was once a famous book written by a professor at the University of Chicago, whose name I forgot. It was called Jerusalem and Athens. He had a theory that the whole history of the world revolved around two poles, Jerusalem and Athens. Jerusalem meant that man is made for a spiritual purpose. And Athens was the theory that man is made for a physical purpose, a material purpose. The Jerusalem idea is that man is made to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to serve God. That's what he's created for. And everything else is peripheral. His material existence is peripheral to the service of God. A man's purpose is to come closer to God, to elevate himself, to improve his character, to refine himself so that he can come closer to God. In Athens, the philosophy of Greece said that man is made only for himself, to serve himself, to aggrandize pleasures, power, money, only for himself. Two different, totally different worldviews of what man is all about. And Rome inherited the idea of Athens. And Rome is Esav. Rashi says in the end of Parshas Vayishlach that Rome is Esav. Aluf Magdiel, Rashi says, is Esav. And that is Rome, Rashi says. So the battle between the angel of Esav and Yaakov Avinu, our forefather Yaakov, was a battle over whose ideas are going to affect the world, are going to lead the world. Yaakov Avinu had to struggle. How do you wrestle with an angel? You struggle with your emunah, you struggle with your faith. You remain steadfast with your faith that this is what life is about. Life is here to serve God. And Esau's angel struggled with him. No, man is here to serve himself. That's the antagonist of Yaakov Avinu's goal in life. And Yaakov Avinu won the battle. And that's why we exist today. Because Yaakov Avinu won the battle. The world is here to serve God. And all of history revolves around this one idea, that man is here to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And everything that happens, all the vicissitudes of history, are all leading to one goal, that man should recognize there's a God. The wars, the governments that fall, and the governments that are built, the inventions that are made, societies that are built, are all ultimately here so that man should ultimately come to recognize there's a God. That was Yaakov Avinu's victory. But there was one small area in which he lost, and that was the thigh bone. And the Chazal say in Chulin, the Gemara says in Chulin, that what does that represent? The fact that Bateka kaf yerech Yaakov, that the thigh bone of, the sinew of the thigh bone of Yaakov Avinu was moved, dislocated. What does that represent? The Gemara says that that represents Zudoyo Shel Shmad. That represents the generations which will convert to other religions in the course of history. In other words, Esav was victorious to a certain extent, to the extent that there someday would be Jews that would go over to the other side. The body of Jerusalem would remain intact, but some of them, some Jews would go over to Athens and to Rome. Had Yaakov Avinu not defeated Esav totally, then there wouldn't even be Jews that would go over to the other side. But he didn't reach the full victory. And therefore, there are still going to be generations that will stop being Jewish, stop being identified with the goals of the Jewish people. Even though the body of the Jewish people would continue, it says, Vayova Yaakov, Yaakov went to the completion limping, but he was able to reach his goal after the battle, and then when he arrived at his goal, he no longer limped. Vayova Yaakov Sholem. When Yaakov Avinu reaches the end of days, Mashiach comes, and Yaakov Avinu will have defeated the ideas of Esav, then Yaakov Avinu will cease to limp. So that's the whole idea of the Gita Noshe. Now, what's the idea of Tisha B'Av? Tisha B'Av commemorates a battle between Esav and Yaakov, between Rome and Jerusalem. Obviously, the people in Rome realized what they were doing. When Titus defeated the Jewish people and destroyed the Beis HaMikdosh, he built an arch in the central square of Rome, which still exists till this day, the Arch of Titus, in which he depicted the vessels that he stole from the Beis HaMikdosh, that he captured from the Beis HaMikdosh. There's a relief there of the menorah and other kelim that he took out of the Beis HaMikdosh. And in Latin, there's an inscription that says, Israel capta. Israel is captured. It was such an honor for him, for Titus, that he captured Israel, because this meant that his worldview was ascendant. His worldview would now be predominant in history. No longer do we have to contend with the Jews. As another great enemy of the Jewish people in recent times, in our times, wrote, I will mention his name in the Beis Medrash, as he wrote, the Jews are the conscience of the world and we have to get rid of them. As long as there are Jews around, we have to feel guilty about occupying ourselves with selfish goals. Get rid of the Jews, we'll be able to totally devote ourselves to our own goals, to the goals of improving ourselves, improving our pleasures and our might and our commerce and our prestige. So, this is what we're mourning on Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is the struggle between Esav and Yaakov. And this is a case where Esav won. He overcame us, destroyed our Beis HaMikdosh, and dispersed us to all four corners of the earth. And even constructed an arch that says Israel Kapta. The Mekubalim say that every day of the year corresponds to one of the 365 sinews of a person. As I'll say, that there's Shasa, Hamache Vovim, 248 limbs, which correspond to the 248 positive commandments of the Torah, and Shasa, 365 sinews in the body, which correspond to the 365 mitzvahs, the negative mitzvahs in the Torah, the things you're not allowed to do, there's 365. And the Bali Kabbalah once read said that every day of the year corresponds to another one of these 365 sinews in a body. And the sinew which corresponds to Tisha B'Av is the Gid HaNoshe, because this is the day when the Jews were overcome by Esav. So therefore, if you eat on Tisha B'Av and don't mourn, it's as if you ate from the Gid HaNoshe. Why? Why are we not allowed to eat from the Gid HaNoshe? Why can't we eat from that sinew? Why can't we eat? Why can't we receive sustenance from the victory, something which symbolizes the victory of Esav? The Gid HaNoshe symbolizes the victory of Esav. Why can't we eat that sinew? Because if we receive sustenance from that sinew, then we might become a little bit part of Esav's camp. We have to stay away from anything in which Esav was victorious. So we have to, we're forbidden to eat the Gid HaNoshe, because the Gid HaNoshe represents Esav's victory over us. Whoever eats on Yom Kippur, on Tisha B'Av, whoever eats today, the Rizal says, it's like he eats on the Gid HaNoshe. Why? Because if you eat today, that means you're not mourning. You're not mourning over the loss of the Beis HaMikdash, which means you're not mourning over the loss of Yaakov, of the Jewish people, to Rome, or from Yaakov to Esav. You're not mourning that. You don't feel bad about it. If you don't feel bad about it, then you've gone over to Esav's camp. Then you are as if you're eating from the Gid HaNoshe, equivalent of eating from the Gid HaNoshe. So now, what is mourning on Tisha B'Av? Mourning is a recognition that we are in pain over the fact that Esav overcame Yaakov. What good does pain do? What good does mourning do? What good does feeling bad do? It's a rejection of the forces of Esav. It's an identification with the forces of Yaakov. By mourning, by feeling sad and feeling pain, and praying that the time should come when we should no longer mourn, or feeling that a tragedy has happened to us, then we are identifying with Jerusalem. If we don't mourn, then we identify with Rome. The Gemara says, the Gemara has a story in Yuma. The Gemara says a story that once in 70 years, the Romans made a parade. After they defeated the Jews and after they destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, every 70 years they made a parade in Rome. And there's a whole description there of what that parade consisted of. It says that they took a lame man, someone who couldn't walk well, and they put a whole man on top of him, man who wasn't lame on top of him, and they paraded him through the streets of Rome. And they put on top of this whole man that was on top of the lame man, they put the skin of Rabbi Yishmael. And they dressed him in the clothing of Odom Harishon. They had the clothing of Odom Harishon, the first man. They dressed him in those clothing. And they paraded him through the street and said, This is what happens to the brother of our master who is a fraud. This is what is done to the brother of our master, who is a fraud. Our master is Esav. The lame man represented Yaakov. As we just said, he limped. The whole man represents Esav. And the lame man carries the whole man on his shoulders through the streets of Rome. Once in 70 years, because the first Beis HaMikdash, the first temple was destroyed, after it was destroyed, 70 years later, the second Beis HaMikdash was built. They're trying to say, the Romans are trying to say with this parade, look, 70 years have elapsed, and the Jews have not recovered. This shows that our victory is complete. The Jews will never find a salvation. They did it every 70 years to prove that they have performed the greatest benefit for mankind. Israel kapta. The Jews will never revive themselves. So the lame man represented Yaakov Avinu, and he carries the whole man on his shoulders. Esav, as if to say, the real leader of the world, the ruler of the world, the one whose ideas are really permanent, powerful, lasting in this world, is Esav's ideas. Look, the lame man, Yaakov Avinu, is carrying him on his shoulders. And they dressed the whole man, they dressed Esav in the clothing of Odom Harishon. Odom Harishon dressed themselves in clothing after he did the sin of eating from the tree of knowledge. Eitz Hadas. Odom Harishon had clothing. That meant the clothing represented, this is what man really should be like. Whom should man be like? Esav. Esav is the ideal man. And Yaakov Avinu limping, doesn't say what clothing he was wearing, some kind of degraded clothing probably, is carrying Esav on his shoulders, wearing the clothing of Odom Harishon. This is what man is. I'll add a parenthetical statement, which is a personal opinion. If you ask anyone, what's the purpose of a university? Any university? The answer will be, is to study man. As a matter of fact, I think it's on the logo of many universities, the idea that man is the purpose of knowledge. That's Esav's view, that's Esav's worldview. Everything is for man. Everything is to enhance man, to make him better, make him wealthier, to be able to conquer nature, able to make new inventions, to be able to build buildings and roads and highways and satellites and computers, all for man, so man can have greater enjoyment and greater wealth. No university ever says that they're interested in man coming closer to God. Only a yeshiva does that. The yeshiva and the university, their philosophies are Jerusalem and Athens. All the universities have Athenic architecture. Notice, the Jewish yeshivas don't have practically any architecture. But that's because everything is inside. Everything is inner. Everything is in the soul, not external. The struggle of the culture around us The culture around us is the culture of Esav. If there's any attempt to incorporate religion into the culture, it's never as a goal of mankind, but because religion makes you happier, makes you more satisfied, it builds your family, makes you more relaxed, you live longer, get along better with your wife. It's all selfish reasons. They're all true, but they're selfish reasons. But that life is for serving God, that's a revolutionary concept of the Jews, of Yaakov Avinu. Life is here to serve God, and the rest is peripheral. And Esav is that life is here to serve man. Esav, Athens, all of it. That's a struggle in history. In fact, this professor in Chicago said this in his book. Athens and Jerusalem. That's the struggle of mankind. There's one part of mankind that struggles for Jerusalem, for spiritual matters, and there's one part of mankind that struggles for physical, material matters. So this parade, they dressed this whole man who's on top in the clothing of the automation to say, this is man. This is what man is all about. That lame Jew down below, he's nothing but a servant. But this idea that man is everything. And then they took the skin of Rabbi Shmuel and put it on his head. Rashi says, what is that skin of Rabbi Shmuel? It's alluded to in the kinyas that we said today. Rabbi Shmuel was the Kohen Gadol, high priest, the holiest person in the Jewish people. He was the one person who was permitted to go into the Holy of Holies on Yom Kippur. He was the holiest man going into the holiest spot on earth, the Holy of Holies, on the holiest day of the year. So he combined the holiness of a man, the holiness of space, the holiness of time, all together, all three together. And this great man, this holiest person of the Jewish people, was murdered by the Romans because he taught Torah to the Jewish people. He was one of the 10 Ahuge Malchus, one of the 10 martyrs killed by the Roman Empire that we mention in our kinas today. Arze Alavonai, the heart-rending kina that we read about the ten Ahuge Malchus, the 10 martyrs of the Jewish people. And there we have the story of Rabbi Shmuel. That Rabbi Shmuel was about to be killed. The daughter of the emperor saw him. And she realized that she had never seen anything so beautiful like Rabbi Shmuel. The beauty of a man who had entered the Holy of Holies on the holiest day of the year, and whose thoughts were constantly involved with Hashem, God, and Torah. A beauty radiated from his face. And she begged her father, don't kill him. There's nothing like that beauty that exists in this world. It's a crime to destroy that beauty. The emperor said, no, I'm sorry. The decree has been made and he has to be killed. So she said, at least, father, I ask you one thing. Skin him so I'll be able to preserve his skin. But you have to do it alive or else you won't catch the freshness of that skin. Yeah? So the father said, okay, I'll do that for you, my dear daughter. I must accede to your beautiful aesthetic sense where you realize something's exceedingly beautiful when you see it. And they skinned him alive. And Rabbi Shmuel didn't utter a word while they were skinning him. It was a gzeira. He accepted the decree of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But when they came to the place of his tefillin, when they took off the part where he would no longer be able to put on tefillin and to declare that he believes Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, when they skinned that part of his body, he gave out an enormous scream of pain. And then he died. And that skin was preserved by the daughter of the emperor. And it still exists, the sages say, in Rome, for all our, all we know, maybe it's in the somewhere in the Vatican, in their museums, their hidden museums, who knows. So they took that skin, that stuffed skin of Rabbi Shmuel, and put it on top of Esav. Tell us, we are the masters of the beauty of the Jewish people. We have here a definition of the difference between Rome and Jerusalem. What is aesthetics? What are aesthetics? What makes us, what stirs our soul when we see something beautiful? We see a sunset or something other beautiful, or listen to beautiful music or art or poetry. What stirs our soul? The Jew says what stirs our soul is that we sense with the aesthetic that there's something more to us than the physical. We hear beautiful music, a beautiful symphony playing. Something stirs our soul and we feel, ah, there's more to life than eating hamburgers. There's something spiritual to life. Our souls resonate to the music, which shows that we have a soul. Aesthetics to a Jew is not a goal in itself. The Romans have an expression, art for art's sake. Art for art's sake. That's not a Jewish concept. What does art for art's sake mean? That the goal of aesthetics is to make us feel good. It's like you hang a painting on a wall because it makes you feel good. I don't go into why, stir, schmurs, who cares? The main thing is that I feel good through it. Purpose of aesthetics is to make me have another enjoyment. If we have a symphony orchestra in every city of America, it's because the people want to have some other kind of enjoyment besides eating in the restaurants and drinking and going to the football game. They want to have something spiritual in their lives. So they go to the symphony orchestra to be stirred. But it's just the experience of being stirred. It doesn't prove to anyone that I have a soul. But it does prove that you have a soul. Why should anyone be stirred by a sunset if he's nothing but an evolutionary accident? He would be stirred by a sunset. What survival benefit is there in being stirred by a sunset? We're stirred by a sunset because we sense that we have a soul, that there's something beyond the physical to the world. There's beauty. It's like we see an expression of something beyond the physical in a sunset or in any work of art. That's the aesthetic sense. To Rome, aesthetic sense is a hamburger, nothing else. It's a more refined form of hamburger. And that was the daughter of the emperor. She wanted the skin of Rabbi Shmuel because she could gaze at it and have a pleasure of seeing something aesthetically beautiful. To us, beauty is a resonation of the soul. And if it doesn't have that, then there's no point in beauty. We believe very much in beauty, but we won't make museums where we just go in and be edified and enjoy ourselves. beauty has to be an expression of the spiritual in a person. Different attitude. So this skin of Rabbi Shmuel, which is put on the top of that whole man who dressed in the clothing of Adam, meant to symbolize the victory, the triumph of Esav over Yishmael. The skin was there to say, beauty is nothing more than a human pleasure. Nothing to do with the spirit. We've conquered the sense of aesthetics also. All aesthetics are useful for, or to give us another thrill, another type of pleasure. Doesn't mean anything. Man is not a spiritual being. There's this man who claimed that. Look at him dragging the whole man on his shoulders through the streets. Who's right? We're right. How was the parade? There's a kine that we say today, she is expression. Certain aspect of this idea. I'll translate. The heart mourns and there's no comforting. And my pain over this is greater than any other pain. On the son and daughter of Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol, the son and daughter of Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol, this man whose skin was peeled, had a son and a daughter. Zichrom Yekoy Bilvov Yasima. Their memory burns in my heart. When they were captured by the Romans and fell into the hands of two masters, and they were neighbors who lived next door to each other. And they spoke to each other. All of this is in poetry. They told each other the stories of their conquests over the Jewish people in Israel. One said, I just came back from the booty I took from the Jews. And I captured a servant, a slave woman, dressed in beautiful clothing, whose face has the glow of the moon, and whose shape is like the most beautiful women in history, daughters of Eiv. That's what one said. And the other said, his neighbor said, I just came also from the booty of Jerusalem. I captured a slave, a manslave, beautiful eyes, who shines like the sun in its strength at noon, and the moon when it's full. Come, let's put them together, have them in one room, and we'll share the children that are born from them. They'll be the most beautiful children in history. And to hear this, ears echo, and I tear my clothing. As they agreed on this both together, that night they put them together in a single room. And the masters waited outside. But they, the slave, the male slave and the woman slave, cried in bitter tears. Till the morning, their tears did not stop. One, the man who was the son of Rabbi Shmuel, said, with a burning heart which melted from pain, a descendant of Aaron HaKohen, how could I marry a slave? And she also cried, with pain that didn't stop. the daughter of Yocheved, also daughter of a Kohen, how could I marry a slave? For this pain, the stars have to cry. Ur Boika, in the morning, says Ezekiel, when they saw each other, who they were. Hoy och, hoy och, hoy sigbiu. They fell on each other's shoulders and cried, oh, dear brother, dear sister. And they cried and cried until both of them died. For this, Yirmiyahu cries, Albeinu bas rav anhimo. Yirmiyahu mentions this, the son and the daughter. He refers to the son and the daughter of Yishmael, Kohen Gadol. That's what we cry about on Tisha B'Av. That's the 24th kina of that we say every morning, every day, every year on Tisha B'Av. This represents, again, the difference between Yishmael, between Yerushalayim and Rome. To Rome, relation between a man and woman is for profit. Can I get pleasure? Can I get children that I'll be able to sell as a slave? The beauty is nothing but a commercial entity, something that I can sell. The beauty of the children of Yishmael, the brother and the sister, something that they could sell. And the children of Yishmael, of Rabbi Yishmael, had a different view of what the male-female relationship is. It's to carry on the tradition, carry on another generation of the Jewish people. The son, how could the son, a descendant of Aaron HaKohen, marry a slave woman? And she, how could she, a descendant of Yocheved, how could she marry a slave? It won't carry on the tradition of the Jewish people. Sex to Goyim, to Rome, is a tool for selfishness, a tool for pleasure, tool for profit. But to a Jew, it's a means of continuing the Jewish people. It's a means of creating love between man and woman and family and children. That's what it's for. Because life is with a purpose. Life is for a way, life is here to serve God, nothing else. Here we have not only Rabbi Shmuel himself symbolizing the difference between Rome and Jerusalem, but his children symbolizing that difference. Hoy och, hoy och hois. And they cried on each other's shoulders until they died. Now to go back to Yirmiyahu's answer. Yirmiyahu said to Plato, your other question where you asked, why should I mourn stones and wood? You won't understand because you're not Jewish. Why? Because we mourn, because our mourning is the way we get back to building the Beis HaMikdash. We don't mourn out of sentimentality. We don't mourn, make museums and talk and cluck our tongues and say, ah, we once had it so great. We don't make pictures of the shtetl and say we were once nice, or look for our history to make us feel secure. Historical, with a beautiful history. That's not why we mourn. We mourn because the mourning is how we create our future. The mourning builds the future Beis HaMikdosh. Whoever is Misabel in Yerushalayim, whoever mourns on Yerushalayim, whoever can cry over the brother and sister, whoever can cry over the skin of Rabbi Shmuel, whoever can cry over the Churban Beis HaMikdosh, is building the Beis HaMikdosh. Because we were overcome by Rome because we subordinated ourselves to Rome. Rome didn't, like Nefesh HaChaim says, when the Romans went into the Beis HaMikdosh and destroyed it, burnt it, Chazal say, Kamcho Tchinot Tachnos. You're grinding up, ground up flour. It's already ground up. It's already destroyed. It was destroyed in heaven. The physical Beis HaMikdash is just an expression of what happens in the souls of the Jewish people. The souls of the Jewish people became subordinate to Rome's philosophy. They wanted to live by Rome's philosophy. Beis HaMikdash is just an external manifestation of their souls. So you're grinding up, ground up flour. It was already destroyed. And the Nefesh HaChaim says also that when a person brings a wrong thought into his mind, he's doing worse than Titus did by bringing whatever he did into the Beis HaMikdosh. Because we are the Beis HaMikdosh. The collective Jewish soul is the Beis HaMikdosh. And when we permit Rome to overcome our inner Beis HaMikdosh, the outer Beis HaMikdosh crumbles and turns into dust. So we are really mourning to rebuild the Beis HaMikdosh. We're mourning to change our attitude. We don't want to be Romans. We want to be Jews. We don't want to live in Rome. We want to live in Jerusalem. We don't want to serve man. We want to serve God. We feel pain that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Because when the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, that means that we are subordinate to Rome in our neshamas, our souls. So this was the answer Yirmiyahu gave Plato. If you'd be a Jew and you would know and believe that the Beis HaMikdash will someday be rebuilt, and we have in our souls that belief, we know that it's going to happen, that's part of our makeup as Jews. Don't forget, it's over 2,000 years since the destruction of the Temple. And we still sit on the ground and mourn it. What nation does that? What nation has such a sense of reality of something that happened 2,000 years ago? What nation leaves a corner of the house unadorned? Zecher l'Mikdosh. What nation breaks a glass at every wedding? Zecher l'Mikdosh. What nation says, Imeshkachech Yerushalayim Tishkach Yemini? What nation is so faithful to the Kosel HaMarovi that when you come there you tear your clothing if you haven't been there 30 days? What nation is so committed to the belief that there will be a rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdosh? It's part of our genes. Can't live without it. Every speech ends with Mashiach coming. Every discussion has the underlying belief that there will be a Mashiach. Every Jew lives with that belief. That's why he never despairs. He never loses hope. A Jew knows it'll be saved. It's part of our makeup. If you'd be a Jew, my dear Mr. Plato, and have that belief, then you'll understand why we mourn. because we know we have to get back to that point. We will get back to that point by mourning. That's the purpose of our mourning. Our mourning is to bring home to ourselves with whom we identify. Do we identify with Rome, or do we identify with Jerusalem? The mourning is the belief that man is not the goal of life, but man is here to recognize there's a Borei Olam, there's a creator. Meshkachech Yerushalayim, Tishkach Yemini. If I'll forget Yerushalayim, let my right hand forget its power. Tidbak L'sheini L'chiki, let my tongue stick to its roof, to the roof of the mouth. L'eskarechi, if I don't mention you, that's part of my life. When we finish the kinis, we all stand up and say, Eli tziyim yoreho, k'mo yishov etzireho, chivsulo b'sura sak al-bal niyoreho. A beautiful tune, a very mournful and sad tune, has been sung for thousands of years. It's even sung in the middle of Musaf. Those chazonim that know the right nusach, when you say Alein l'sech v'zabachinim v'inyono, we sing it with the tune of Eli Tzion v'yoreho. L'chadoidi in many communities is sung with that nigun, the Shabbos chazonim, the Shabbos before Tisha B'av. Why do we stand up when we sing that tune? All the kinis, we sit down. We get to Eli Tzion v'yoreho, we stand up. And everyone sings it together. It's the most heart-rending part of the whole kinis. Why do we sing it standing? Why not sitting like everything else? I once heard, the reason is like this. After finishing the kinis, we want to make a statement that we continue our mourning after we get up also. We don't stop with the kinis that we sit while sitting on the ground. The echo of those kinis stays within us while we're getting up and while we're walking around and while we're living, while we're doing everything all year. The echo of the kinis that we sang still remains with us. And this idea, the kinis are all about one idea. We mourn the fact that Rome has overpowered us and still overpowers us. Its culture still overpowers us. Just look around at what the culture is. You'll see it overpowers us. We mourn the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. We mourn the loss of the skin of Rabbi Shmuel. We mourn the loss of a brother and sister that can die with pain over realizing that they practically were violated a tremendous transgression against humanity. That a Jewish girl should marry a non-Jewish man, and that a Jewish man should marry a non-Jewish girl. We mourn all of that. And we mourn it as we walk when we get up. And we continue it. The echoes of the mourning, the echoes of the kinis stay with us all through our lifetimes, because without that, we're not really Jewish. The Jew mourns and knows that there's more to life than an iPod. There's more to life than 5,000 channels of TV shows coming in on one computer. There's more to life than that. Life is that we can become angels, we can become spiritual beings, Life is that we can come closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what we're here for. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, help us, give us the wisdom that we should always, all through the year, be able to maintain the lessons that we study on Tisha B'Av, and to really say with feeling, Yimeshkocheich Yerushalayim, Tishkach Yemini, Tidbak L'Shoini L'Chiki, Yimloyaskorechi.